Hello and welcome back to the Blitz Scalable Venture Deals podcast. I'm your host, Chris Yeh, joined by my frequent co-host, Scott Johnson of Blitz Scaling Ventures. And today we'll be covering deals that were announced in May of 2023. So Scott, it's great
to have you back. It's not May yet.
Oh, wait, sorry, March of 2023. Oh my goodness. Should we go back and cut that out? Or should we leave it in so people know this is authentic? I think we're going to leave it in.
We can leave it in.
We'll leave
it's only April. So yeah, we're doing March deals.
There we go. Well, Scott, since you are here, why don't you give us a state of the industry? What do things look like at the top line?
Well, we dipped back down in March to 58 total deals. 40 of those were in the US and 21 of those were seed deals. So that's, you know, it's roughly in line with January and February. January was 55 deals. February was 70. We thought maybe we were on an uptrend there. 58, sort of back to a low level of deals being done and not really seeing any signs of the market waking up. It's at a steady state of health. It's not a sick market, but it's tough to raise follow-on capital. I mean, there's, you know, how many Series Cs? So there were 8 in January, 1 in February, 1 in March that were announced. So I think people are just sitting on their cash, not doing rounds, avoiding repricing as long as they can, hoping that the recovery comes before they run out of cash, cutting burn, being very cash aware in every decision they make as a management team. So that's, you know, that's what we're seeing in our portfolio. That's what we're encouraging. And I think we could extrapolate. I think we could say that's what's happening broadly, that when companies need money, then okay, they go get it. And often from insiders, and those rounds aren't announced. We've seen
some other interesting things recently, like, for example, Substack raising money via crowdfunding. Is that a sign of weakness or strength?
I think it's creative. I don't want to say it's a sign of strength. I think anytime that you muddy up your cap table with money that's not got deep pockets, then you're taking a risk. So you, unless you're like, well, I don't know. I guess they're a mature enough company that they can do it without worrying too much.
Now, the other key thing to mention is, of course, since the last time we recorded a podcast, we saw the meltdown of Silicon Valley Bank. Do you think that that's affecting the plans to announce deals? Like, for example, it won't have yet affected the deals because it took place recently enough, but do you think venture firms are so busy and preoccupied during that period of time that they didn't bother to announce deals or felt that announcing deals in a midst of a maelstrom was a bad idea?
Yeah, it probably froze the market, right? I mean, yeah. People were very unsure for a couple of weeks and took a couple of weeks out of a month, and that's half the month. So it's a big deal when things just freeze up.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see what the results look like for April then, because we have now gotten past, at least it appears right now, the worst of the banking crisis. And so we'll have to see what happens. It's also the case, Scott, this is not a result of our standard survey, but just a result of anecdotal information. But having spoken with two companies that are heading into YC demo day today, both of them had already easily exceeded their fundraising targets. Bear in mind, these are seed deals and premium seed deals at that, because they're YC companies with serial founders who have successfully exited for hundreds of millions of dollars. But nonetheless, it reveals that there isn't any problem with raising money for some companies at the early stages.
That's right. That's what I meant by this is a market with a degree of health. You know, it's not a sick market where nothing's getting done. I think when there's opportunity, there's capital available that wants to seize that opportunity. And that is good. I mean, that's not how it was in 2000, for example. Like that was a very different, horrible, freezing completely. It was a nuclear winter for venture. Nothing was moving. And, you know, so I think there's a lot of optimism around AI. You know, that's giving the market a lot of energy. That's the shot in the arm that the market needed. And we'll see, maybe it'll, in April numbers, now that Silicon Valley Bank's not the headline of every single news outlet, we'll get some momentum built back in, at least at the very early stages. Most of these AI companies are very early that we're seeing.
Well, so, I can tell you the enthusiasm for AI is palpable. And I am, for example, being asked to go to South Korea later on in May, or is it June? I can't remember. No, it's in May, to speak at a generative AI conference and one of their startup conferences. And people are ringing off the hook saying, hey, we want to hear about AI. And we're going to do one of those events for our LPs, as a matter of fact.
Yes, that's today, April 5th. So we will continue to watch that. That's a big deal. This is, there's a lot going on. We're going to pay close attention to it. It's amazing that you're so close to it via your affiliation with Reed. So
I got to just tip my cap to Reed for once again, being able to spot what was happening with the future and jumping on one of the biggest business trends to hit us in history. So, you know, whether it is the original .com internet with PayPal, whether it is Web 2.0 with Facebook, whether it's the sharing economy with Airbnb, now AI with OpenAI and a host of other companies, his ability to see the future is just unparalleled.
Yeah, what vision. Tremendous.
Amazing.
Okay. So we have, you know, kind of a meh month, but still healthy. I think that's the bottom line. And we have a few deals to talk about today that meet our test. So let's dig into those. First, there's a repeat called Chef, S-H-E-F, which is coming back for a Series B. We talked about them when they did their Series A. So we're not going to go into depth on this and go over the scoring again, but it's interesting that they were able to raise $66 million Series B in a market where growth rounds are really hard to come by. So our suspicion is that they're doing pretty well.
Yeah, and this is a company where, again, we can pin the blame on me for this one. We said, hey, this looks interesting. Chris, why don't you try it out because it's in the Bay Area? And I promptly then did not try it out. So I think our strategy with this one is going to be, I'm going to turn things over to someone more reliable, i.e. my wife, and ask her to order up some food so that we can try it out and see. But certainly we're interested in the model before. The fact that they're able to raise in this terrible environment is a great sign for them. And the proof will be in the pudding. Or the paneer, as the case
may be. Just to remind everybody, this is a marketplace where home cooks meet people who want home cooked food. And so it's a marketplace where you need a very liquid market for that to work, because the food can't come from too far away. So you need to grow it locally, and there's a lot of challenge to making that happen. But I think there is value to that, that there are people who really don't like to cook, and there's people who love to cook. So if they can meet in the middle and create some healthy eating, then that's good for everybody.
And just to make sure we're really specific about it, what you're getting is a chilled meal that you are going to then heat. So it's not a meal kit where you're going to do cooking. It's a chilled meal where you're going to heat. I suppose they felt that it was unappetizing to call it a leftover marketplace, because these are being cooked specifically for the customers, but that's essentially what it is. The food is cooked and then chilled and then made ready for the customer to reheat and eat.
Yeah. And some things are just better after they've sort of melded for a day. And so I think it could be, you know, some things are good when they're very fresh. So
I can tell you, I'm looking at the front page right now for my area, and I see curry, Burmese, Ethiopian stew, Russian stew, Afghan chicken, kimchi, curry, dal makhni. So there's a strong sort of sense of these are the kinds of spicy foods that do tend to get better as they actually age for a day or two. So that's actually a good thing. They
reheat those things and they're better for sure. So that makes sense that that's what you're seeing. Okay. So down to new deals. And we're going to start with one called Ghost Message, which is a social network. And as our usual listeners know, social networks generally score very high for us because they're both viral and they're almost always winner take most. This one, however, did not make the grade. And we had sort of a healthy debate on this. With social networks, the problem always is, okay, it scores really high, but is this going to be something that's truly habit forming long term?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of social networks that come and go, and there's sort of toy social networks, and then there are real ones, and the real ones are few and far between.
So let me tackle Ghost, and I will also try to separate out my personal aggrievement and disdain for the company from my analysis of the company. So the analysis of the company, the reason it doesn't get all the way to a Blitz scalability score is the fact that it doesn't really hit a strong winner-take-most market. And that's because the way Ghost works is you are creating essentially group texts where you can message with your friends. And then within those group texts, you can go into ghost mode and post anonymously, but just to that group of friends. And so the fact that it is this platform for these small groups means that it's difficult for it to achieve a global network effect. It's far more of a local network effect. Yeah, in theory, there's this sort of thing where, hey, you know, I need to get my friends on. And if everyone's on, it's easy to form these groups. But really, how many of these groups are you going to have? You're going to have like one or two. And that's really all that matters. And so as a result, it doesn't form itself into something where I think there's a strong winner-take-most dynamic.
Yeah, I don't quite agree with that, honestly. Like, I feel like if you're friends with a whole bunch of different groups, I've got my soccer team, and then I've also got my, you know, sort of people I do Dungeons and Dragons with, and then I've got another group over here, and you don't want to, I mean, you want to have a single... And then you might have your camp group, right? And so they're dispersed all over the place. And
yeah, but this brings
these messaging apps tend to be winner take most.
But this is the biggest problem I have with Ghost. And this is where I get to, maybe I'm just getting old and don't get it. But the whole distinguishing factor of Ghost is that you can go into ghost mode and post anonymously to a group of people you already know. Why would you do that?
I don't know. I mean, like... It's a little like Snapchat, which is just another chat thing, but the messages disappeared. And that was actually a big deal because of, you know, all the...
But the messages disappearing is no longer actually the main thing about Snapchat.
No, but it is part of the reason people continue to use it. The main reason is that that's where everybody is.
Exactly. Disappearing messages was just a gimmick. It was a gimmick that worked because it got people to try it out. But ultimately, it was the messaging itself that was powerful and just building an app that was good at doing that.
Yeah, I think it was more than a gimmick, honestly. Like the fact that everything you ever said on the internet would live forever scared the heck out of teenagers who wanted to express themselves in ways that they wouldn't want remembered forever. So,
are you afraid of dick pics?
I'm not. But I think sexting, sure. I mean, sexting was a big problem. And I think that was a legit issue that they solved, and they did a brilliant job of it. And this one, I don't know, like every time there's been an anonymous texting capability, there's been bullying, and it's gone badly. And we read an article about the company that said, oh, you know, we're going to monitor and carefully put guardrails up against that kind of thing. And as soon as we get a report of it, then, you know, we'll take steps. And they were kind of vague about it. And maybe it's possible that you can keep that to a minimum, but anytime people are anonymous, boy, they behave badly. So I worry a lot about this ghost mode that they're introducing. And
there's no reason to have a ghost mode unless you want to bully. I guess the only other thing it'd say is, oh, you message your crush or something like that. I mean, this is not a use case.
Maybe it is. We'll see. I think the teenagers will tell. So we'll watch this one. We gave it an 8 in winner take most. We gave it a 10 in viral growth because you will bring your friends on if you're using
exactly. It. Even when there's no global network effect, you get your friends onto a platform if it's where you want to actually communicate.
Yeah. So the product market fit, you know, we're giving it a 7, which is kind of our score where we don't really know, but we think it's probably not too bad because they were able to raise money. And then they have tens of thousands of users. I mean, no reason to give them a lower score than that. Big market size.
Well, we gave them a 9. Let's be clear. Originally, you gave them a 10. I bumped them down to a 9 because I said—
For market size?
This is not a use case that the majority of people need. I mean, again, I have never felt an occasion where I'm like, yeah, you know what? I need to post anonymously to a group of people I all know.
The other thing is, I think you outgrow this. I think, you know, after you're out of high school, you probably don't do this anymore because it's kind of gimmicky, as you said. Oh, by the way, $8 million from a whole bunch of different people. So there's no real lead on this deal. It's a bunch of good angels. General Catalyst threw some money in, which is how it ended up on our podcast. But it's not something where there's a strong lead investor saying, we believe. So yeah. I think, you know, everybody's sort of in wait and see mode on this, and that's where we're going to be.
Yeah. So it ends up scoring, after we account for the 8 in winner take most, the 7 in product market fit, and the 9 in market size, gets 10s everywhere else because it's a classic social network. It ends up with a 79, which is just shy. And again, count me as somebody who's skeptical of the success of this one.
I don't think anybody would have ever guessed that, Chris. I'm so surprised to hear it. Okay.
Let's not forget, this is also a company that originally began as chat for people connected by crypto wallets, and they pivoted to this because of the crypto winter.
That's true. So either they're amazing entrepreneurs or they're opportunists, and we will know in 6 months. But you know, they were able to get a bunch of users on. So
tens of thousands of users is not a bunch of users. That's not a lot.
You try it. That's hard. That's not easy.
I've done it many times.
It's not easy. Okay. So let's move on to Match Day. Match Day is a game company that's not really a game company. It's a fantasy sports company, but it's kind of a game company. It's all about soccer. I guess Lionel Messi was involved in its founding.
Lionel,
very sorry. $21 million is a decent seed round, right? So that's a seed round from last year, not seed round from this year, or 2 years ago. I mean, that's an impressive amount of money to raise right off the bat. It reminded us of SoRare. If you recall, SoRare was NFTs for top soccer teams and their players. And you could sort of buy and sell these cards on SoRare and put teams together, and then they would play over the weekend, or you know, have a game, and then you'd get points based on how many of the how well your players did. So this is a little different in that the players themselves are going to be active on the platform, and I'm not sure to what degree, but that's different. And the other is that they're going to do simulated games that you can do right away. So you build your team, and then you could play anybody else's team, and you know, it'll simulate a game. You can either watch or just look at the results. And they may also have a way to have those to do the same thing that SoRare does, which is to have the actual game determine who's got the better team. But they've added this twist where you don't have to wait for the weekend, that you can play your team against your friend's team all the time. But a lot of it's the same, where you buy cards for the good players that you want to put on your team, and they cost money. There's a whole cryptocurrency here underlying this that you can actually convert to fiat. So there is a game here that you can play and win and get money for, which people love to gamble. So I think that's a good draw. We didn't play it yet, so we don't know everything about it, but that's Match Day. $21 million is pretty darn good, and it hit our radar because Greylock's involved.
Yeah, and a couple, as you mentioned, Lionel Messi's group, Playtime Ventures, is also involved, which is fascinating. Again, you know, one could argue whether athlete participation is a positive signal or a negative one, but for something that's directly sports related, I think it is a positive one. Sure, especially when that athlete is the most famous athlete in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that if he's going to participate on the platform to some degree, that's going to draw people. They'll get their tens of thousands of users. So that's a real advantage.
Exactly. So let's go through the scoring. We didn't give it a full winner take most market because we like the fact that they're tying up the players, but they're still the leagues. The leagues have their own IP rights, which so rare has been sewing up. So not clear it's fully winner take most. Viral growth of distribution, classic sort of thing. You want to show off your collection. You also want to play against your friends. You tend to bring other people onto the platform. The whole card game dynamic has been very successful over years with things ranging from Pokemon to Magic the Gathering, multi-billion dollar franchises. Product market fit, still early on, 7 so far. I mean, once we play it, if we find it addictive and can't stop playing it, maybe we bump that up. Market size, huge. Gross margin, huge. Org scalability, op scalability, no problems, because these are not physical cards. These are virtual cards. That adds up to an 82, which makes it, you know, a very intriguing company to look at.
Yeah. And we're, you know, it's a good stage to become aware of it as well. So yeah. If they start taking off, then God, the valuation at So Rare got so out of control so fast, because if you recall, that was the height of the NFT hype.
Yeah.
And they were a beautiful blend of NFTs with a real game that mattered in the real world and a way to win based on, and we've said all along where gaming meets NFTs is an interesting area. And this was exactly that. And it had fantasy sports wrapper on it. It was brilliant. Yeah. So, but the, my God, how fast, like that company, I think had 200,000 a month in revenue and a $4 billion valuation at one point. It was crazy.
Yeah. And again, the reason why we think that these things are so important for any sort of NFT deal is the blockchain is great on controlling supply, but you need to have a source of demand. And in this case, the source of demand is the most popular sports leagues in the world for So Rare, the most popular athletes in the world for Match Day. And so that's what makes them intriguing. Most people in the crypto / Web3 / blockchain space get it wrong because they focus on the supply side rather than the demand side. And the last thing I would say is, if you take a look at it, you mentioned the So Rare revenues. I think it was also the case that the So Rare number of users was in the tens of thousands range. So I guess maybe that makes Ghost Message a little more impressive because it has as many users as So Rare. But, you know, So Rare was being valued at $500,000 per user, or $400,000 per user, registered user. Now, I remember when we paid for eyeballs back in the day in the dot-com boom, we got very excited to get, you know, $10 an eyeball, $20 an eyeball. How excited we would have been to get $400,000 per eyeball.
I think that is an excellent product, So Rare, but I think the people who bought stock at super high prices might have a little wait before they see a return on that investment.
Well, look, the company could be a phenomenal company and go public at $2 billion, and those investors would still lose money. They would actually work out okay, right? They would take the cash back instead of the conversion, but
no, they'd have to convert. If the company goes public, you have to convert.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. So you could lose money with the company going public.
Well, you'd have to hang on and hope that it eventually got to, you know, hold on to that comment and hope it eventually recovers to the price you paid.
Not good. Not good at all.
Yeah. So, well, all right. It also makes it tougher to go public, right? Because the people holding those later round shares are going to be like, if you want to go public, we're gonna have to cut a deal. Yep. Okay. So this last one is the highest score of the month, and it scores an 83. And I really like this one. It's called Head Race. Another Greylock deal. So two Greylock deals in a row, and Breyer Capital. I don't know if people know Jim Breyer.
The legendary Jim Breyer. Excel
for so long, ran Excel so brilliantly, and then moved on to form his own firm. So really top tier.
And of course,
here,
you're one of the guys you really like, Packy McCormick, the author of the Not Boring Substack.
I see an investor here.
Yeah.
I didn't see that. Oh, there he is. Sure enough.
He is an investor in this as well.
So, okay. Anyway, so $6 million seed. So not a huge amount of money for this early company, but I love what they're doing, which is allowing a headhunter who's a top performer to leave whatever platform they're on and use the software that Headrace has created to become an independent firm or just an independent actor and continue doing headhunting, keeping all the money and yet acting and behaving very professionally with this software layer that they are gifted by Headrace, and Headrace just wants a little bit of the money. And you're saying to yourselves, that's not a blitzscaler. Why is that winner take most? And the reason is that they're giving away the software so that they can get as large a network of these top headhunters built as quickly as possible, and then give corporations access to that network. So suddenly yes. you've got a lot of demand flowing into this new pool of supply, and the supply is the people who are so good that they were able to break off onto their own and build a business. So it's the top performers, probably at a lower price because there's no overhead, and not necessarily, but maybe. And then in really easy to access and search. And so it's, you know, anytime you're doing a search on a network, you get a lot of really good information about who's on the network and which is the best one for me. So anybody who's hired a headhunter, everybody in venture has hired lots and lots and lots of them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They work hard, they earn their money. It's a tough business, but boy, do you pay. And you want to make sure you don't make a mistake, because if you make a mistake, that search can last too long. You end up with bad candidates and you're burning money in the meantime. It's super costly to do this wrong. So it's a high stakes. You want the best marketplace here with the best people in it. I think they could build that.
So I love this deal as well. And it's because I've spent a lot of time thinking about the recruiting industry. It's an industry I was always fascinated by because it seemed to be run, or rather overrun, with people who are wildly incompetent and unprofessional. And that's just sort of the nature of the beast, which is pretty crazy. If we think about it, what this brings is transparency. So historically, you've got all these folks who are headhunters and you have no idea who's good. You kind of ask around. There's no transparency. You can't see who's actually doing a good job. And you end up defaulting back to, once again, hiring Heidrick and Struggles or Egon Zehnder or whatever, just because, well, they're the big name. And there's no guarantee that they necessarily do a better job. And maybe there are individual superstar headhunters, David Barron leaving to join Benchmark is always a great example. But, you know, that was rare. And that was basically the result of press coverage as opposed to any real metrics on how people did. So Headrace providing a simple way for the best headhunters to distinguish themselves and providing transparency to the customers is incredible. And this is a very expensive, high consideration kind of purchase, which means that the network effects around selection are strong, which means that this is a great example of a winner-take-most market. There's a great example of viral growth or distribution because every single headhunter hanging out their shingle will be promoting this themselves. So we love it. So we ended up giving a 9 out of 9 on winner take most, 9 out of 9 in viral growth and distribution. I could even see an argument for a 10 on winner take most, but you know, it's a relatively fungible thing. There's still a lot of headhunters in the world, so I think 9 is appropriate. Product market fit, we gave it an 8, even though it's early stage, because this is a pretty well understood problem space. It seemed to be pretty straightforward. People are already up and running on it, making revenues. Market size, huge. Gross margin, org and op scalability, 10 out of 10. This is an 83, which is eminently blitz scalable. Now, the one caveat is, in the tech industry, this is a terrible time. Not a lot of hiring going on. And so this is a tough time for headhunters to go solo. But I like to think that there is a sort of counter-cyclical element to it. This is a company that's raising money very early on. It's probably running really lean, has a chance to grow into this marketplace while people are sort of like experimenting and willing to try things. And I think that even though this is not the right time for a company like this to expand, this might be the perfect time for a company like this to establish itself.
Sure. Iterate on the product. Get it just so it's got great fit. And then explode when the market comes back. Headhunting is going to come back. That's always important to get the right team to execute on a strategy and build a company. So that's forever going to be something people want to do and will pay very well for. I would argue for the winner take most is a 10. I just feel like you're going to be, if you're a headhunter, you're going to want to plug into that network where all that demand is coming and all those are going to come in. You know, I would give them a 10. I could see the 9, but that would actually pop the score up well above 83 if we did that.
Exactly. It would be incredible if it did. So anyways, we both love this deal. Again, despite the current headwinds against it right now, in the long run, we think this is a great business.
Okay, that's it for the month.
Awesome. Well, Scott, thanks again for joining us. We're going to be continuing to watch this space very carefully. Need to see how the continuing fallout from the banking crisis hits deals in the month of April, and continue to watch the overall trends we see in terms of seed and pre-seed versus later stage deals. But Scott, as always, thank you so much for joining me. And I hope that all the listeners tell their friends and return again to listen to another edition of Blitz Scalable Venture Deals next month.